Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Perhaps you've been watching the media in recent days. If so, you've certainly been seeing the controversy over the choice of Rick Warren, pastor of the Saddleback Community Church in suburban Los Angeles, to deliver the invocation at the inauguration of Barack Obama as President of the United States. On January the 20th, two pastors have been invited to give prayers in the course of the inaugural ceremonies. The first is Rick Warren, the second Joseph Lowery, longtime official with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, an associate of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So you've got two very different approaches in terms of generation and perhaps of symbolism when you're looking at those two ministers chosen to pray. But the big controversy over Rick Warren praying is coming from the homosexual activist community, and that community is outraged, suggesting that when you're looking at Barack Obama's choice here, it is a sellout. You have language being used here that's very reckless. Rick Warren being called a homophobe, the choice being called an atrocity, an assault upon the gay community. What's going on here is very clear. The gay rights community has every right to expect nearly unconditional support from Senator Barack Obama, now President-elect Barack Obama, because he courted and received the overwhelming support of the homosexual community. Even in words we will hear the President-elect say, and he made those words vocal yesterday, he says that he is a fierce advocate for gay rights. They don't think that choosing Rick Warren is representative of being a fierce advocate. Now, I think it shows the zero-sum game being played by gay rights activists here. I think, though, there's a deeper lesson for us. I wrote an article on my website at albertmohler.com on the high cost of being and staying cool. And it comes down to this. There are a lot of people who want to be cool. They want to be seen as cool. And by cool, I'm simply using a word to say admirable, respectable, in, with it. And Rick Warren is one of those persons, I think, who has strategically, he's talked about this. I'm not putting words into his mouth. He has been very clear about wanting to present a different face for evangelicalism, different than what he has seen as the more strident and perhaps more hardline face on many of these social and moral issues that evangelicals have shown in the past. And without naming names, just suggesting that he doesn't want to be known as one who's against everything. He wants to be for something. He has worked hard. He is an activist for AIDS treatments and for dealing with the eradication of poverty around the world. He has given himself, especially to the continent of Africa, at one point saying he wanted to be the first purpose-driven continent. And he has done the kinds of things, showing up at the Davos meetings and all the rest, where he has been trying to build bridges. And he has incurred some criticism from conservative evangelicals. I think some of that criticism justified. I think some of it not justified in terms of his approach. But now he is being condemned as being completely unacceptable. As I wrote in my article, he has gone from being Billy Graham to Fred Phelps in one media minute. Billy Graham as a picture of respectability in the culture. And the first headlines about Rick Warren's choice to give the invocation were just that. Here's the new Billy Graham. But within hours of this announcement, he had turned into Fred Phelps, the pastor of hatred, that does the most atrocious things and it really demonstrates a hatred towards homosexuals. Rick Warren doesn't hate homosexuals. He has not acted or spoken in any way in hatred towards homosexuals. So what did he do? He supported Proposition 8 in California. That's enough. Now, I said there's a deeper lesson here. That's the lesson. And if you read my article, you're going to see how I try to make that point as clearly as I know how. There is a high cost to being cool in a society that is going towards the full normalization of homosexuality. If you say no, if you say that you believe that there is any aspect of homosexual behavior that is wrong, if you think there is any sense in which homosexual behaviors are sinful, if you think that society should not adopt same-sex marriage and thus you support something like Proposition 8 in California, then you are completely out of bounds. Your choice to pray is an atrocity. Your naming as the person to give the invocation is an assault. And I just think that's a very important lesson for evangelicals to see. Because at some point, every single church, every single pastor, every single evangelical believer is going to have to make the choice between standing upon biblical truth or being cool in a society that is defining cool in every way other than biblical truth. Does that mean we simply become strident? No. It means that we have to be really, really attentive to tone and to voice, but we have to be even more attentive to what we say and make certain that what we are saying is true. The phone number to join this conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm not throwing Rick Warren under the bus on this. One of the things I deal with in my article, I add a supplement at the end, and I say I would not deliver the invocation if invited. Now, you're thinking, low risk of you being invited. That's right. That's right. There's a very low risk that I'll be invited to do this. But I want to say, honestly, if I were invited, I would have to turn it down for the very reason that I think it would send a very, very bad signal concerning pro-life issues. Because this is a president who has made very clear his intentions within hours of assuming the presidency of sending down a flurry of executive orders that will undermine the dignity and sanctity of human life, that will open the floodgates for federal funding of the destruction of human embryos in human embryonic stem cell research, that will lead to, I am certain, as the administration coming in has promised, you'll have all kinds of federal policies reversed, revised, changed in order to facilitate these things. I could not in good conscience pray before that, knowing what was going to happen. I'm not saying that no pastor should under any circumstance. I'm saying, as honestly as I know, that I couldn't under this circumstance. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that topic in just a moment. First, we're looking at some of the issues in the news. The New York Times today, here's a headline for you. Psychiatrists revise the Book of Human Troubles. This story actually appeared yesterday, but I think it's worth our mention because here you have a news story on the revision of what is sometimes called the encyclopedia or the handbook of the psychiatric and psychological community. The book is entitled, you're going to love this title, it sounds like a bestseller, The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. That's right. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Now, in a world of bureaucratized language for everything, if you want to get medical coverage, if you're going to admit someone to the hospital, you got to code it with some kind of disorder. You look it up in this book. If it's psychiatric or psychological, this is where it's found. It is known in the short form as DSM, with a number following it because there are different editions. Now, how have these editions changed? Well, it tells you everything you need to know, I would argue, about what's going on in the field of psychiatry. Number one, the vast multiplication of problems. The original DSM, that original Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, had, 283 disorders. No, excuse me, that's the current one in the year 2000. That is triple, so that there were less than 100 when it was published in 1952. Fast forward, now 283. They're working on the sixth edition. No one believes that it will be a smaller list than this. If anything, it's going to be much, much larger. I want to talk, though, about what it says morally about the profession of psychiatry and psychology and the claim of psychiatry and psychology to be scientific. If you look at previous editions of the DSM, you will see homosexuality identified as a mental illness. Then, if you look fast forward to changes over time, you will know that in 1973, the American Psychiatric Association simply voted that homosexuality was no longer to be a diagnosis of mental illness. Then, in 1987, the group dropped illnesses such as sexual orientation disturbance and ego dystonic homosexuality. One official with this process said, quote, "You had, in my opinion, what was a social issue, not a medical one, and in some sense, psychiatry evolved through interaction with the wider culture," end quote. Now, you see, that gets immediately to the biggest issue here, and I think that is one of the most helpful things I have ever heard. This psychiatrist says, this is Jack Drescher, a New York psychoanalyst and member of the Sexual Disorders Work Group. He says it was a social issue, not a medical one. Well, you know, that's really interesting. What are psychiatrists doing voting on a social issue? They're basically saying here, When the society's mores change, we change. There was no scientific discovery that changed the view of scientists between 1972 and 1973. It was about politics and social change. Now, that tells you a lot about psychiatry and psychology, and so does the multiplication of disorders and the politics behind all that's going into the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, soon to be Volume 6. Maybe multi-volumes, the way this is expanding. Pretty soon, you're either in there in one form or another. You're either in therapy or you're in denial. That's the way lots of folks look at it. Back to talk about the controversy over Rick Warren and the inauguration of President Barack Obama. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, the course of the last several days, it's been really interesting. You had the Newsweek cover story, and then immediately there was a firestorm over that, deservedly. Now, all of a sudden, there is a firestorm over who is praying for whom at the inauguration of President Barack Obama coming up on January the 20th. By the way, a little interesting point here. I could not remember a similar controversy. I did a news search. I used the computer search engines, LexisNexis and all the rest. I couldn't find any record of a controversy in the past over who was praying. So this is something new in American presidential history, a major controversy over the one who gives the invocation. In this case, is Rick Warren. He is known, of course, nearly worldwide because he's the author of The Purpose-Driven Life, a very well-known New York Times best-selling author. He's the pastor of the Saddleback Community Church, a megachurch in suburban Los Angeles. He's been in the media a great deal, and he likes that. That's the world he wants to be a part of. He has big plans, and he has spoken of his intentions to really redefine evangelicalism. Concerned, he says, that evangelicalism has been too strident, too much known for what we are against rather than what we are for. By the way, that language always irks me. That always irritates me. I think when you accept the fact that you have a dichotomy between what you're for and what you're against, you've already lost the battle. But anyway, to give him his due, that's what he said. And also to give him his due, he's certainly right that far too many evangelicals respond in a negative tone, in a harsh, condemnatory tone. My problem, though, with all of this is that some people are going to think that you are harsh, and some people are going to think that you're intolerant, and some people are going to think you're unloving if you actually believe that there is a certain truth about how God intends us to live our lives. And so my point in all of this is that there's very little wiggle room when you come right down to it. For maneuvering, you don't stay cool very long if people are going to disagree with what you believe God would have them to know about how they are to live their lives. I mean, that's the bottom line. But I understand the kind of the motivation to want to be cool. I'm using cool here as something of a euphemism for what it means to be considered admirable, attractive, in, hip, a friend of the culture rather than perhaps a critic of the culture. Rick Warren, if there is evangelical cool, I guess he represents that. We have an entire group of churches known as emerging and emergent that are the quintessence of cool when it comes to trying to send a cultural signal of coolness. But my argument is, look to what's going on with the controversy over Rick Warren and learn. Because what does this controversy say? I want to give Rick Warren a word of credit here. Rick Warren has not gone wobbly nor unbiblical on the issue of homosexuality. And that's the issue here. He has said that he believes that homosexuality is a sin. He has said it in what I'm sure he intends to be as loving a way as possible. He has not used condemnatory language. He does not use code words. He does not embed this with verbal bombs to try to score points. He is very careful with his speech, but he has been very biblical with his speech about homosexuality. And when it came to California's decision about Proposition 8, Saddleback Community Church, the church he leads, and Rick Warren himself were known as those who wanted to see Proposition 8 pass, and it did. And now the homosexual rights community is simply outraged that President-elect Obama would choose Rick Warren. Now, I think that we may have had this discussion about Rick Warren given the invocation before all of this controversy, simply because it's rather newsworthy in itself. What is the president-elect trying to say? The president-elect is, as we will hear him say in his own words in just a moment, a fierce defender of gay rights. He is, I believe that Robert P. George at Princeton's exactly right. He's the most pro-abortion candidate, perhaps even the office holder in American history. What does it say that he is called someone who identifies himself as pro-life and as one who believes that homosexuality is sinful? What is he trying to say? Well, Barack Obama himself said he's trying to say inclusiveness. But now you've got folks on the left in the liberal community and in the Garrett's community who say, we're not going with that, not at all. I want you to hear a little bit of what's going on here. First of all, in terms of those who are framing the controversy, no one perhaps is doing this with stronger language than Joe Solmanese, who is head of the Human Rights Campaign, and he has really tried to make his opposition to the choice of Rick Warren very, very clear. Let's listen to clip 7.
You think this is a hostile act?
I don't think it's a hostile act, Chris. I think it's an insensitive and a politically short-sighted act. I mean, I agree with a lot of what President-elect Obama said. I think it defined his campaign and what I think his administration will be like. And I admired him when he went to the Saddleback Church, when he engages people like Rick Warren in this sort of a dialogue. I just think at this moment, when we are going to be turning a page and the eyes of the world will be watching us from one of the most divisive administrations in modern history to a unifying time, as Senator Obama has talked about, when the eyes of the world are on us in that moment, to have picked a man like Rick Warren to open that ceremony, someone who in the midst of the Proposition 8 fight likened the relationships of same-sex couples to incest, polygamy, to just a whole range of divisive rhetoric that he let unfold, I think is not hostile, but it's certainly insensitive and politically short-sighted on the transitions and the inaugural committee's part.
Yeah, you'll notice several things there. By the way, he's doing his best not to criticize the president-elect directly, but that doesn't hold very long, especially when you read the letter that he sent. You can find that, by the way, by going to my article at albertmiller.com. A couple of other things there. He accuses Rick Warren of likening homosexuality, incest, and pedophilia, or polygamy. That's the word he used. I did a quick search on that as well, and all I can find is where Rick Warren said that the biblical strictures against homosexuality also include strictures against these other things, and they all need to be honored. And that's what I think most of us would want to say. I want you to listen to one other clip from Joe Solmanese. This one is also very interesting. This is Chris Matthews of Hardball asking him, a very specific question. This is clip 8.
Is it because of his open position opposing, or rather supporting Prop 8 out in California, which basically outlawed gay marriage or same-sex marriage? Is it because of that overt action, or is it because of his beliefs? What is your concern here, or your opposition here?
It's not just because of his support for Proposition 8. I mean, both President-elect Obama and Pastor Warren do not support marriage. But, you know, President-elect Obama has said it's a matter for the states to decide. He opposed the passage of Proposition 8. Rick Warren supported the passage of Proposition 8. And it really, more than anything, was his rhetoric. It was the language he used, the divisive words that he used, the incendiary arguments that he made that say to me, this is not somebody who is the right person to kick off such a symbolic moment of change in our country, as we're going to see in just a few weeks.
Folks, I don't know that we can learn all the lessons from this immediately. Sometimes we need a little historical distance in order to take the picture again and try to figure all this out. But I'll tell you right now, what this tells you is that for a significant number of people, certainly on the left and in the media, a lot of the people who define cool, all you have to do to be rendered immediately uncool is believe that there's some problem with homosexuality, any problem at all. And if you oppose same-sex marriage, you're on the bad list immediately. Rick Warren has done more than just about anyone I know to stay off that list. But he's on it now, just on that one issue. And I want to tell you, I'm thankful that he did not go wobbly on the issue of same-sex marriage. I'm thankful that as a pastor, He dealt with that in a straightforward way and in a biblical way. But I've got to tell you, those who find themselves in this kind of quandary are going to have to quickly make a decision. We're going to go with the scripture or we're going to go with the culture. And that's a decision, I argue, in my article I published today, that we better make in advance and we better get that one right. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Right back with the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. As I said, I think this particular controversy tells us a great deal about where the world is going. It tells us a great deal about the cost of coolness. That's just the way I put it, because it's what I sense is the ambition of many people, and it's one I sympathetically understand. Sure, let me just admit that right up front. We would all like to be considered cool. We would all like to be considered admirable and respectable and in sync with the culture and a friend to all. We would all like to have those things said and understood about us. But the reality is that that's not our calling first and foremost. Our calling first and foremost is to be people of the truth. And sometimes the truth is not popular. It's not considered cool, certainly by a culture that has set itself in opposition to the Word of God. And that this puts us in a constant quandary, because we want to be right in tone and right in spirit and right in attitude and engagement to be able to speak to persons who do not know Christ in a winsome and attractive way, so that we can present the truth of Christ to them so that they will hear it. And we have confidence that the Lord blesses the preaching and communication of the gospel, that He indeed opens hearts, and we see people come to faith. We do not want to, by our attitude, by a hardness, a shrillness, not to mention a meanness, come across in the wrong way. But what this controversy over Rick Warren is showing us is that for a good number of persons, you can't be sweet, and you can't be kind, and you can't be loving, and you can't be tolerant if you believe that there's anything at all wrong with homosexuality, if you oppose same-sex marriage, etc. And I'm suggesting that every single church is going to face this. There are a lot of churches who want to be cool. You know, liberal Protestant churches are the quintessence of cool. They are, because they can go with the culture on anything. And once you abandon biblical authority, then cool's your game. You know, but you'll notice that that's not leading to great church growth in those sectors, because if you're cool and the culture is cool, the culture doesn't need you in order to be cool. That's the quandary of liberal Protestantism. Once you join the culture doesn't need you anymore. You're not saying anything distinctive, so, you know, why go? You have the emerging and emergent models right now, very much of legitimate interest and concern within the larger world, and certainly within evangelicalism. The big question there is, okay, I understand your criticisms of the evangelicals of the past. Understand that. Got that. Okay, there's a lot of legitimate criticism there. You want to be cool. You want to be able to present images of coolness and identification with the culture. You don't want to be opposed to the culture. I understand that. But when someone says, what do you believe about homosexuality? Guess what? You're going to have to choose between Bible and cool real quick. And I'm not just throwing stones at anyone else, because that's true for all of us. And we had better decide in advance that we're going to be very, very clear about our biblical convictions. And then we're going to be also very, very intent in terms of searching our own hearts, that we communicate these things and speak of these things and deal with persons on the basis of these questions as lovingly, as compassionately, and as engagingly as possible. But, folks, this is tough stuff. Rick Warren now finds himself in a whirlwind. And in fact, the title of my article is The High Cost of Being and Staying Cool, Rick Warren in a Whirlwind, because that's where he is. And I'm not throwing him under the bus on this. I'll tell you, one interesting question would be, if Barack Obama asked you to deliver the invocation, would you do it? You know, that's the other question I was asked. I got asked that by the Wall Street Journal, and I dealt with that in my blog. I separated it. You'll notice it's a supplemental article. But to my answer is no, I would not. And it's a tough thing. I would admit that if I were asked, it would not be an easy thing to turn down. But just given where this particular president-elect has already told us that he's going, I could not do that. I couldn't do it in good conscience. I would have to say no. I understand some others would and could. I would have to say no. I don't think I could live with myself, given what I know will be happening in the hours, not just to say days, weeks, and months, and years, just even the hours after the inauguration of Barack Obama. Speaking of the president-elect, he had to speak to this controversy because the press has been going at him. It's been a 24-hour act of a great deal of media attention, a frenzy. And when we come right back, we're going to hear the president-elect speak to this himself, but now's the opportunity for you to speak. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. What does this say about where we stand over against the culture and its probing on this question? And by the way, it is probing. You can think, well, I'll avoid this. I had a pastor tell me not too long ago, several years ago now, he said, I have a position on homosexuality, but I don't talk about it because it would offend people. Well, number one, that is pastoral cowardice of the most inexcusable kind. But let me also tell you, pragmatically, it's not going to work because no answer is not going to be good enough for a culture that's going to demand the answer it wants to hear. Give me a phone call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Chester Cap, Virginia. Rainer's listening to Nixon 170. Go ahead, Rainer.
Yes, I was calling to say I think it's a great opportunity for Christianity for him to speak up. I really do. I think it's a great opportunity for him to get the word of God out there and to place that on the hearts of our president and each and every one that's going to be listening.
Okay, and Rainer, I appreciate your call. Let me ask you, is there any candidate for whom you think he should turn down this opportunity? Any person being inaugurated, or are you saying just do it regardless of who's inaugurated?
Regardless of who's inaugurated, because God uses the good and he uses the evil. This is a great opportunity for a man of God to get out there. We are told so many times in the Bible that people didn't turn away. Daniel didn't turn away. He stood on God's word in spite of who he had to be under. And I feel that, you know, we can still make a difference.
Yeah, appreciate your point, Rainer. Appreciate your call. And I would say that the argument being made here is basically, if you have a platform, take it. If you have an opportunity, take it. And there are a couple of issues here. You know, does he have the freedom to say what he would want to say? Is the transition committee, the inaugural committee, going to vet the prayer? You know, the last controversy that I heard was, again, it wasn't a national controversy over this. It was just more or less an internal Christian discussion was, you know, what if the inaugural committee says you can't pray in Jesus' name? There's some very interesting questions coming up here. But that's all been eclipsed by the rest. Rainer made her point. Let's go to Ed calling from Colorado. Go ahead, Ed.
Hi, I'm just wanting to express kind of my disappointment in Rick Warren, because I had been I enjoyed reading his books and stuff, and I really feel kind of let down. I think he should have probably turned it down just on the facts of Mr. Obama's wishy-washy activity. And I don't mean to want to stand in judgment of anybody, but I just don't believe that man is, I just think Rick's making a mistake.
Well, I think, Ed, that I'm basically where you are in terms of the decision that I would have to make. And again, I put myself on the record on this. I'm in today's Wall Street Journal on this. I'm at my own website, my own article, making this very clear. And hear me on this radio program. I would have had to say no. And this is where, as much as I appreciate Rainer's call, I can't completely go with her point, because there's always a context in which this takes place. And somebody's trying to say something by inviting you. And if I'm invited, somebody's trying to make some kind of statement. And I got to figure out whether I can fulfill that expectation. And I know that Barack Obama's trying to make a statement about inclusiveness here. But I sure wish the unborn were included here. You know, there are just some severe limitations to the context here that I would have to take into consideration. Ed, let me just tell you, you know, I wrote in my article these words. I said, I'm not throwing Rick Warren under the bus on this. And I'm not, because I'll tell you, I have in my own life and ministry had to make some very difficult decisions about whether I should or shouldn't do something based upon which decision, A or B, would serve the cause of Christ and the gospel to the greatest extent. That is sometimes very, very difficult to come to conclusion on. I have had the luxury of being able to come to a conclusion to say I would not do this under the circumstances of not actually having to tell President-elect Obama whether I would or wouldn't. And so I want to be humble here to say that if you've got the president-elect of the United States on the phone, that's going to be a completely different pressurized context for making this decision. I do, though, want to go back, and I'm going to agree with you a little more than you might think here, Ed, by saying that I think Rick Warren has set himself up for this, however, by some of the things he's done and some of the things he's said in the past. And I think once you try to create some kind of new identity, new branding for evangelicalism, by insinuating that those who came before you have been too strident, you're going to find yourself pretty soon put in a position where you're going to have to be just as strident on some issue somewhere, or at least considered that way. And I think that's the other side of it, considered that way. That's not to say that we do not lament the fact that so many reckless and perhaps even ugly things have been said by some. In reality, sometimes the difficulty is to say, yeah, I wish their tone had been better, but their point was exactly right. That is what God says. That's what the scripture teaches. And as much as you'd like to find a sweeter way to say this in the view of those who would hear it, sometimes it just doesn't come down that way. And Ed, I do appreciate your call. And in terms of the decision, I'm with you. It's a difficult thing to really try to think about adequately. Now, just to make matters worse, as you're thinking about the decision-making, let me play you what Barack Obama said at his press conference yesterday defending the choice of Rick Warren. When you think about whether Rick Warren should have said yes or no, this is either going to make it a whole lot better or a whole lot worse. When you hear what he says, you'll know what I mean.
I think that it is no secret that I am a fierce advocate for equality for gay and lesbian Americans. It is something that I have been consistent on and something that I intend to continue to be consistent on during my presidency. What I've also said is that it is important for America to come together, even though we may have disagreements on certain social issues. And I would note that a couple of years ago, I was invited to Rick Warren's church to speak, despite his awareness that I held views that were entirely contrary to his when it came to gay and lesbian rights, when it came to issues like abortion. Nevertheless, I had an opportunity to speak, and that dialogue, I think, is part of what my campaign's been all about, that we're not going to agree on every single issue. But what we have to do is to be able to create an atmosphere when we, where we can disagree without being disagreeable, and then focus on those things that we hold in common as Americans.
That was the president-elect speaking yesterday in answer to a reporter's question. Like I say, it makes it a whole lot better or a whole lot worse, depending on how you look at this. I'll tell you, one embedded issue in the president-elect statement is when he said, you know, he wants his inauguration to be when Americans come together. The big question is, what does that look like? Does that mean we come together and just say, we don't think these things are really so important, so we're not going to talk about them? The problem is when you get Joe Salmanese, who you heard, a prominent gay rights activist, and you put someone who believes that homosexuality is a sin in the same meeting, there's not going to be a together there that's based on agreement. And that's the limitation of this vision as I see it. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Jim's been hanging on the line, listening on WFIA, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Jim, thanks for waiting. Go right ahead.
Good evening, Dr. Mueller. I'm in agreement with you. If I had been asked to deliver the invocation, I would have declined as well. But what do you think Rick is hoping to achieve by accepting this role and responsibility?
All right. If I'm going to try to make the argument, I would say he's going to be hoping he can build some bridges, that he can hope to put a positive, kind, compassionate, Godward face on evangelicalism. I think he would say he's going to try to engage rather than to withdraw. He's going to try to be in conversation rather than to go into a cave. I think he's going to say it as a platform in which I might be able to say some things about the gospel, that, and who knows how the Lord will use that. I think it's important that when we're invited to this, that we show up, because if we don't show up, you know, there's an empty chair, and that's not going to be a good witness for the gospel. Jim, I tried to make his argument. That's my stab at it. And I think it's a continuation of the kind of approach that Rick Warren has set. Now, I'm not going to make that argument, or at least I'm going to tell you I don't find that argument compelling. And I go back to the fact that there is something going on in a presidential inauguration in these choices. The person making the choices, in this case, the president-elect, is trying to make a statement. Now, it's not a ridiculous statement. It's an understood statement. By saying you have Rick Warren at the invocation and Joseph Lowery at the benediction, you're making a statement about your inclusivity and all the rest. But when on the background of this, you've got all of the presidential promises that have been made, all the campaign rhetoric that's now dumped into the America's political system, when you've got all of the campaign promises and the pledges made by the president-elect, you're going to have one man given the invocation whose convictions are going to be trampled over the next several days, not just on issues where we say it's disagreement, but where literally, I believe, and I even believe that Rick Warren believes, that human life and human dignity is on the line. You see, that's the big question. That's why when I was speaking to Rainer, I said, you know, would you take the argument I asked her to where you would give this kind of invocation for anyone? Well, you don't have to reach in and pull out the Adolf Hitlers and the Joseph Stalins and all the rest to realize that there are public ceremonies in which you would not want to take part. So there are some boundaries somewhere. I think this is an issue of hot debate for good reason. I appreciate all who called, and Jim and Ed and Rainer and others who were speaking about these issues, and those who've also written us in by contacting us at albertmuller.com. Thanks for those messages as well. I'm sorry we didn't get time to get to more of those today. But the bottom line in all of this is, right now, we need to pray for Rick Warren, who is in the midst of a whirlwind. May he now, and if he indeed gives the invocation on January the 20th, say those things that are filled with conviction and those things that truly reflect the glory of God and the gospel of Christ. I'll meet you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.